You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the people and ideas behind your favorite online brands. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Chris Carter, James Peisker, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
You're the founders of Porter Road. For those who don't know, Porter Road is an online butcher shop based in Kentucky and Tennessee, but it has a big story, and I want to go into all the nitty-gritty of that. But first, we'll start with Chris. Would you mind introducing your co-founder, James, and telling us a little bit about him? And do you remember the exact moment you met and what you thought of him at that point?
I do. I remember his eyes.
Wait, describe his eyes. What color is his eyes?
Blue.
No, way wrong.
Damn it. Green.
they're green. I just saw them.
I first met James probably close to 10 years ago now at a restaurant here in Nashville. He had grown up in St. Louis, went to culinary school at CIA in Hyde Park, New York, and him and his now lovely wife had moved to Nashville so that she could pursue her master's at University of Vanderbilt.
PhD. She would murder you for saying master's.
Her PhD at the University of Vanderbilt. She's a doctor.
Doctor, Marta.
And yeah, and then everything else is, I think we've been attached up to hip ever since.
James, what do you remember about that moment when you met Chris for the first time?
Well, actually, he kind of gave a Cliff Notes version. What had happened was we met when we were line cooks together at the restaurant, like Chris said. But I think the moment that I knew that this guy was probably going to be a big part of my life and be a good friend was when we were getting some work done on our house and we were about to sleep in a tent in our backyard. And middle of Nashville in the middle of summer is pretty hot, even at night. So it's going to be like 90 degrees, even at night. And Chris, who I had known, I think for 3 days at that point, told me, well, you know, I have this camper that I go camping with. I can pop it up. It has an air conditioner. And, you know, I was 3 days knowing him. I said, you know, that's incredibly thoughtful. It's incredibly nice. But I don't know you. And I feel a little weird doing that. And he insisted. And then, you know, we ended up going our ways. And he texted me about an hour after we got off work. And I was setting up my tent in the backyard. And Chris texts me and says, what's your address? And I texted it back. And about 15 minutes later, I hear this ruckus going on in the front yard. And it's Chris and his little brother setting up the camper in my front yard. And at that moment, I was like, okay, you know, This guy's legit. He's a real guy. He's a, you know, true Southerner. And I was like, all right, I can dig the South. I'm into it. And then all of a sudden, Chris's little brother comes running around the camper screaming like a little girl. And right after him is this little potbelly pig chasing after him, biting at his heels. So all of us just start running. I mean, the thing's probably no more than 40, 50 pounds.
Yeah.
And there's three grown dudes in chef gear running down the street from this potbelly pig. And about 5 minutes later, this hipster girl comes riding down the street, screaming its name, swoops up, grabs the pig, puts it on the lap, and just keeps on biking down the road. And that was when I knew that seeing this guy where in for a wild ride.
why don't we zoom to the present for a quick second and just talk about what is Porter Road today, and then we'll kind of fill in between. How would you describe Porter Road today, you know, to someone new?
Porter Road is truly the United States' first whole animal, sustainable, pasture-raised, no antibiotic, no hormone, online butcher shop. We do the entire process ourselves. You can order just as if you walked in the doors to a neighborhood butcher shop, a la carte, get the items that you're looking for. We're going to ship that stuff out to your door within 2 to 3 business days. It's going to show up in a completely compostable, biodegradable, or recyclable packaging. So there's no bad feeling about that mail order shipping. And it's the best, highest quality, best tasting product out there.
And that raises so many questions about, you know, the logistics of delivering meat to people. There's all kinds of questions about Whole Foods and Amazon and all the different, you know, retailers out there who are you know, probably trying to do something in this area. There's starting a startup in Tennessee is a fascinating question to me, you know, that's not the typical background, especially for a venture-backed startup. So I want to go into all of those different topics with you, but I want to hear a little bit more about the beginnings of Porter Road, you two, you know, meeting at this restaurant kitchen. What led from that moment to actually wanting to start an online butcher shop?
Well, there's a long history in between when we launched Porter Road, which is at this moment a year old now, and when we actually got started. Because 7 years before we ever launched Porter Road, Chris and I were going to farms around Middle Tennessee and processing and cutting up one pig a week and selling it at our local farmers market here in East Nashville. So the evolution of Porter Road has been something almost a decade in the making. And what we've strived to do every day since the start is provide our customers, our family, and our friends with the highest quality product that they can do while it's still affordable. And what we focus on is try to make sure that everything we do, we make the product better, we make the company better, and we make the people that consume it better. And it all, to us, it all starts at the farm. And like Chris had mentioned earlier, we're a very vertically integrated company. So it's the farm, us, and then you.
So you were visiting farms for the purposes of bringing meat to the restaurant initially?
No. So the way the Porter Road really kicked off originally was James and I were, we found each other working together at this restaurant, and we immediately connected on the seasonality and locality of foods and not creating something, but actually eating and creating dishes out of what's naturally there. And then knowing where your food comes from, the education behind it, the transparency in the system, and all of these things mattered equally to us. And like James said, we knew each other for 3 days before I brought him a camper. And then day four, asked him if he wanted to quit the restaurant we were at working together to go open our own restaurant. And we were running a catering company on the side to pay the bills and raise money for the restaurant as well. And keeping with those standards of, you know, using local farms and really striving to find the best products to cook with, even if it was an event for 1,000 people or a private dinner for six. We always want to keep those standards, and we have since day one. And it's really what led us to the fact that we were in Nashville, surrounded by beautiful farmland. You can't throw a rock from where I'm sitting without hitting a pasture with, you know, beef on it, but you couldn't find good local pasture-raised meat anywhere in the city. You could get it frozen and somewhat poorly butchered from a, you know, a farmer at the farmer's market. And it was a very new concept, even though it's something that's been around for since the beginning of time, really. But for us, we kind of saw that and we're like, okay, if we are spending our entire days looking for meat and trying to source the right meat, then the average consumer is having twice the issue we are. So we kind of shifted gears from opening that restaurant. There's plenty of restaurants in the city, plenty of great restaurants in the city that are doing amazing things. And, you know, we found our place providing meat for that home cook for the neighborhood, like Jim said, our family and friends. And we opened the doors of our brick and mortar almost 10 years ago now. And the original business plan there was just for the two of us to work and have a lifestyle business. What we didn't realize is that what we were providing to the community was going to be such a cult following. And literally overnight, we were busier than we could have imagined. We opened the doors with $500 in our bank account, two hogs and one beef hanging. And we had to cut those up and sell them in order to be able to buy more. And it just went from there. Within 5 months, we had 17 employees and .. there's a lot more to fill in, but I'm going to let you ask the question.
First of all, where did your love of food come from and your desire to go into the restaurant business in the first place? And then what was it that led you down the path of sourcing and the kind of the more ethical side? What was there something that you were exposed to? Is it something in your family? Like, how did you discover that angle?
Well, I think it's a combination of perfect timing and being very passionate about what we do. Chris and I are both very social people. We both love entertaining. And I think that's what led both of us to the hospitality industry.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, I personally, when I was a sous chef in St. Louis, we started working with these local farms that were bringing us hogs and lamb and, you know, these great vegetables and things like that. And you start to learn and notice, you know, I'd been in the restaurant industry for about 8 years at that point, and just having a tomato that tastes phenomenal and amazing is something you just can't beat. And you, you know, no matter what you do and what magic you do to it, a bad tomato is going to taste like a bad tomato. And seeing these farmers come in, it started opening my eyes and started to realize that. And then I saw this incredible documentary called Food Inc. that was pretty influential in my life, which led me into, you know, those people in the movie, like Michael Pollan, which I started reading his books, which led me to Joel Salat, you know, and then you just kind of go down this rabbit hole. And my thirst for knowledge just kept me going. And a few years later was when I met Chris. And I think him and I constantly pushing to have the best product on the plate is what drives us still to this day, to make sure that every meal that you have is going to be epic. And Porter Road wants to be there to help you make it even better.
I have this book sitting next to me right now, the River Cottage Meat Book, which is one of my, it's written by this British guy, Hugh Farnley Whittingstall. And he was one of the first people before Food Inc. to go into the farms and, you know, show how chicken is being raised. And that really exposed me to a different way of thinking that I think is similar to what you're talking about. His book has a whole section in the beginning that I think is probably the best 10 pages ever written on the morality of eating meat. And people haven't read it, I would really, really recommend like finding a bookstore or library that have this book and reading it. He weaves a very complex narrative because eating meat is something that humans have been doing since the beginning. But now we're in a world today where we have to contend with, you know, the problems in the meat industry, what that is doing to the planet, the, you know, ethics of all the different aspects of it. And I guess it's such a almost overwhelming problem. I'm wondering, how do you approach it? What are the things that you've set as, you know, standards that you want to maintain? And is there any room to push beyond that?
Well, I think like the meat book that you guys are referring to that I am a very big fan of, but in those type of situations with what he's trying to do is 99.9% of people are never going to be able to have an experience like he's talking about.
Right.
Most people can't go out and do that because we don't have time, we don't have money, we don't have, you know, there's the laundry list of things that we have. So what we focus on at Porter Road is to truly make it available for more people and to make it to where everything you're doing is changing the industry for the better.
With that being said, like, you know, even if you're going to do it on a different level where, you know, if you want to go out and you want to find the farmer that you like the most, that raises the animals and treats the animals the way you want and puts them on the pasture and understands the seasonal grass changes and is raising the absolute best meat, you still don't have the opportunity to turn around to that farmer and say, okay, I'll take two ribeyes. And we, you know, we refer to ourselves as the liaison to the farmer. We're going out and we're doing all that vetting. We're hand selecting these farmers to make sure that they are upholding all these standards. And, you know, it starts with 100% pasture raised, which means that animal spends its entire life in a pasture with grass, being able to act as though that animal would. No antibiotics or hormones. We can get deep into that if you want to. And, you know, that's just the beginning of what we expect from our farmers and the people that we work with are so passionate about what they do. I mean, we refer to them as our farm partners because they really are. They're such a big part of what we do.
Well, and I know that one of the philosophies that you have that is oftentimes mentioned is using the whole animal, but you have to contend with the fact that, you know, customers are going to want the better cuts. How do you deal with educating people or, you know, selling those like off cuts, for example?
Why is one cut better than another? There's no better cut. It's what application you need it for.
But the market at large, you know, doesn't appreciate that necessarily. Like, how do you get your customers to understand that, or how do you find ways to sell those products?
I mean, it started very much for us as education. But as you see now, you start to see ever-changing menus and chefs being more adventurous and excited about what they're putting out. And then there's, you know, really great cooking shows, and people are getting more passionate about what they're doing. And, you know, we thought the same thing as we launched online, that, you know, these offcuts or the butcher cuts were going to actually be something that we had to really work hard to push. But the thing is that the consumer is educated now. And the consumer knows what they want, and they see the Terrace Major, the Chukka, the Bacana, my personal favorite, the flap steak, the tri-tip, all these amazing cuts are really what led us to selling online, honestly. But, you know, we thought that there was going to have to be a lot of education around what those were in order to be able to push those. And now we see that the educated consumer is coming in, and that's what they're going for first.
We've always done, since we were behind the counter at the butcher shop, and now that we do online, education, 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 because really there isn't a better steak and a worse steak. There's a more popular, more well-known steaks, and then there's less known steaks, but I can give you a more flavorful, more tender cut than a tenderloin. I can give you a better grilling steak than a ribeye. But those are the things that people know. And I think with the people that our customers have coined themselves as Portertarians, what the Portertarians generally do is want to be on the, you know, edge. They want to be the ones first to discover this cut. And how are you cooking your Denver steak this weekend? Because once you have a Denver steak, you don't want to go back to a, you know, just regular, boring old tenderloin.
Have you gone down the path of offal as well? Are you selling things like tripe and other things that people maybe are not buying? Because that's the next level as well.
We're not selling them through the consumer market online. We do have access to all those because, as you know, we do. I mean, we utilize the entire animal, but they're more on the local level, like dog food, or if somebody wants liver, or through our wholesale company or something like that. We will be expanding into that, and there is demand for it. And
braised beef tongue is amazing.
We had some last night.
Yeah. Delicious.
Is that something where you think that the industry should be going more in that direction around education?
Absolutely. The beef is not made up of three cuts. It's not made up of a strip, ribeye, and tenderloin. That's like 20-something percent of your animal. And then you have the rest of this entire beef that you need to go and utilize through. And the fact of the matter is that if we continue to push ourselves as cooks, we continue to create an environment wherever we're cooking that brings people together, and then it gives us a chance to explore and try new things. And if we're pushing ourselves with our boundaries of the cuts that we're going against, every once in a while, you may have a miss, you may have a failure, but that time that you get it right and the time that you get to educate your friends on something you learned recently is always a great feeling.
In a dream world, like, what do you think that the industry, at least in the United States, would look like, the food industry and how people eat meat 20, 30 years from now? Like, what would be the ideal in your mind?
So that's the system that we've set out to. That is our mission. That's been our mission from day one. And now with this online platform, it's giving us a larger stance and the ability to scale and expand our mission. And we're calling it the decentralization of the meat industry. What this does is it puts the power back into the hands of the farmer, and it breaks down the broken commodity meat system. What we're currently seeing is here in Nashville, I mentioned briefly that there's beautiful pasture everywhere, and there's all these animals, all these beef standing in these fields, but there's no access to them. And that's because the commodity meat system will raise these animals to what are six or 800 pound weights. At that point, they'll go to a sell barn or be purchased by a broker. And from there, they're trucked out with this, you know, which is just transportation, which we know what transportation is doing to the environment, to the Northwest. And there they are all collectively put together into a small confined feedlot. That is creating the emissions issues that everybody talks about. And then on top of it is we always use an analogy of like school kids coming back from summer and they all have their own germs. And now they all go back to the same school and they're exchanging these germs and now they're all sick. It's the same thing when you bring an animal from all over the country and put them into one location, they're going to get sick. So therefore you have to use antibiotics on these animals. And then just for greed purposes, why not throw some hormones in there in order to get them to grow faster? So decentralizing that and actually keeping those animals on the farm is asking a farmer to say, hey, instead of raising that animal and selling it at a ever-changing price, depending on the stock market, you know, raise that animal to its full life expectancy and to its full size and then sell it at a higher price. You know, I mean, we've worked with one of our farmers to turn, 1,200 acres of row crop into
back into pasture.
Back into pasture. I mean, this is GMO row cropping to tobacco, soy, corn, and we're converting that land back into pasture and putting animals back out there and naturally revitalizing the earth that way.
Do you think it's possible to produce enough meat this way for the American market to meet the demand, or is it something where we should be eating less meat but better meat?
That is,
or both.
Our motto. We tell people all the time that you should eat less meat, and then they look at us like we have four heads.
James just lit up when you asked that question.
Don't you own a meat company? But you absolutely should eat less meat. Mm-hmm. It should be more flavorful and it should be a better product. Because if you have a beautiful 14-day dry age pasture-raised beef, like steak, and you cook that up, you don't need to eat a pound and a half steak. You don't need the 76er steak to satisfy your craving. Because the flavor and all of those flavors that you get from letting an animal live out on pasture, letting an animal grow naturally, is going to make it more flavorful. And the question of can everybody eat this and can everybody feed it? If we're talking about purely 100% grass-fed beef, there's been lots of studies and there's been lots of people who do it. And the census for the most part is no, everybody couldn't eat the amount of meat we will eat with all grass-fed beef. So at Porter Road, we do a grain finish. It fattens them up, makes them grow stronger, bigger, and it makes it take a little bit less time. So it's that equal perfect case scenario to us is that we can still feed people, we can lower the cost, but we can make it a better product because it's never going to leave the farm, it's not going to go to a feedlot, and it's not going to end up having to go into these places where they feed them bottom of the barrel ingredients to maximize their cost efficiency and make the maximum amount of profit.
Yeah, and that grain that we're actually finishing our animals on is a proprietary blend. I always have a hard time with that word. Proprietary blend that we actually do ourselves and grow the non-GMO corn on the same fields with those animals. And they are fed that mixture for the last 90 to 120 days. That's ensuring that the consistency of flavor is always going to be there with the Porter Road steak. We've had many people do blind taste tests and you know which one is that Porter Road steak. And they're also always out on that pasture. They're never taken to a confinement in any way. It is literally a truck that pulls up, fills the troughs with the feed. The animals eat. The feed's gone. They go back out in the pasture. They graze. If they get a stomach ache, they clover or rye or whatever it is that's going to medicate them. Because an animal knows that. So it's not taking the animal into confinement and giving them only one option of feed. It's just a finishing technique.
I want to talk a little bit about the geography of everything that you're doing. So you have offices in Tennessee and in Kentucky is where you have your farms and your processing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And we have a team in New York as well.
Oh, okay. And so it's fascinating to me because, you know, we at Lumi make packaging for a lot of different companies that are mostly on the coasts, but many of them use Kentucky as a hub. And I know that Amazon has a lot of facilities out there as well, because it's central and allows you to access both coasts when it comes to like shipping things to customers. Is that just a coincidence, or how did that, has that become helpful for you now?
Yeah, everything's got a level of a luck mixed into it. And
yeah, success is a lot of hard work and a little bit of luck.
That actually, the reason why we are located in Kentucky is because we're located right in the middle of the farms that we source from. And by being centrally located in the middle of those farms, it cuts down on the amount of transportation that those animals actually spend and keeps their stress level down. And everything that we do, it leads to the higher quality of what Porter Road produces. And as we scale across the country and do it again and again, we will ship from those facilities. And James mentioned earlier in our system, it's farmer, us, consumer. And in our system, it's all done under one roof. The shipping and everything goes out of the exact same facility.
What have you learned about shipping meat in the mail? Because I know that
it's expensive.
Most of the products that you're selling are not frozen also, which is important to mention.
Yeah, that's one of the luxuries that we have, or one of the luxuries we're allowed to provide to the consumer because of the systems that we put in place. It's the utilization of the whole animal. It's the fact that we touch our product like we are the people that are doing the work. We worked with Green Cell Phone. We would have never launched a mail order or online butcher shop ever if Styrofoam would have been our only option.
Yeah.
One of the very first things that we did is we said, it is 2016 or 17, whenever we started putting this together, there has to be a better option out there other than Styrofoam. And if there's not, then this isn't going to work for us. Because all the hard work that our farmers put in and everything that goes into it, we weren't going to stick meat in Styrofoam and send it around the country. It just would have, it would have eliminated everything that we were trying to do. So, I mean, that was the first thing that had to be done. You know, we used the Green Cell Foam product, which is completely compostable. I use it to light my grill with. You can wash it down the drain. And then the rest of our packaging is number four plastic. Even the gel packs that we use are compostable. You cut the corner of them and pour them down. And then we finish off our beautiful boxes with this incredible tape that comes from this incredible company called Lumi. And it's just, it's a very special packaging. And there was a lot of thought that was put into it. We don't want to overpackage things. We want a consumer to feel really good about not only what they've eaten and what they put in their body, but also the fact that they could eliminate and dispose of all their trash in a very responsible manner.
Yeah, we wanted to be something that you could order from weekly, bi-weekly. Like we say a lot, you know, using meat could be something that, you know, you eat a steak and with the leftovers, you chop it up and then you make a stir fry with it, you know, whatever it may be. If you can get it to where you have these flavorful meats, you have these meat seasonings, you have these roasts, things like that, you know, you can make it to where you can almost trade it out and there's no extra waste, no fuss.
It's interesting to me that you mentioned with the packaging, not overpackaging things. It's a challenge that a lot of the meal kit companies have faced because they're individualizing all these different ingredients. And that is one of the big concerns that their customers actually have. How do we bring the same model to other geographies so that we continue to make things more local for everyone across the country? What is your plan there?
So it's all part of the mission. And it's all part of that decentralizing of the meat industry. And in order to do that properly, you have to take the system that we've built in Kentucky and all the hard work that we put in there over the last 7 years, the HACCP plans, the standard operating procedures, the manuals that are in place, every little piece of what we've learned and what we've created there is very much a proprietary. It belongs to Porter Road. And the idea is that you take that system to the farms. The farms don't come to you. So as we scale into the Northeast, we look at a facility there and we make new connections. We revitalize agriculture in those areas. We provide jobs to people in those areas. And then we ship out of that area. Same thing in the Northeast, Northwest, South, and I can say all the regions, but it would just waste time.
You're so good at that.
I know.
But so how do you deal with the fact that, like, today, you know, when I drive up the 5 freeway here in California, you'll pass through, I don't know what that area is exactly, but do you know what I'm talking about? There's an area with huge cattle farms, and you see it, and it's thousands of thousands of cattle and very few human beings. And so how do you actually deal with that as you bring back some of these methods of farming?
That's what we're trying to break, is that it's called a CAFO.
There's more people in prison in this country than there are farmers. And what we're trying to do is help stop that trend.
What's the word that you just used? What's CAFO?
Concentrated animal feed operation.
Oh, wow.
Which is what we keep on referring to when we talk about these feedlots or these places that you bring animals to that are very confined. You feed them lots of really low quality feed and have to feed them antibiotics to keep them healthy and alive. And it creates lots of environmental problems because a lot of these large, large CAFOs can actually produce more waste than pretty large, decent-sized cities we have. So out in the middle of nowhere, we're just basically creating these cities worth of waste with no water treatment plants or anything in place. And when we say CAFO and we're trying to decentralize the meat industry, what we're trying to do is bring the animals back to the farm, which actually helps regenerate the farm's land, helps take care of it. And if you ever try to overcrowd a farm of pasture-raised animals, you will not have a farm anymore. You will just have a bunch of bare rocks. So it actually forces the farmers to continue practices to help save their land, save the environment, and save us all.
When you decided to go raise money for Porter Road, I'm really curious to know what was the investor community's first reaction to what you were telling them?
Where are you from? Where are you from?
A lot of them just immediately reached for their checkbooks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and they were like, do you have an ink pen I can borrow? No, it was,
I believed you. I was like, okay, keep going.
Yeah. No, we already had a brand. We've been around for almost 10 years.
We had a profitable company.
Yeah. We had a profitable company,
which most people who are presenting a deck don't have that already.
So what we did is, I was fortunate enough to have a really good friend, Ryan Darnell of Max Ventures in New York, and reached out to him with a video of some beautifully packaged skirt steaks and strip steaks, all of those butcher cuts, I'm doing air quotations, that we mentioned earlier, perfectly organized in our walk-in. It was right after the holiday season. And even with our brick-and-mortar shop in Nashville and our very well-established wholesale company, we still didn't have a large enough reach in order to get all of these meats to people. So I just made a little video with my phone and sent it to him. And he responded back, you know, what am I looking at? And I said, you're looking at the United States' first true whole animal online butcher shop. And that started a daily cadence Monday through Friday at 5:30 a.m. We would get on the phone for 1 hour as I was commuting up to Kentucky and kind of talk through, like, you know, what makes Porter Road able to lead this space? And we knew the timing was right because, I mean, you know, this is just the way the consumer is purchasing things online. Like, I can't tell you the last time I pushed a cart around a store with toilet paper and paper towels and light bulbs and dog food in it. Like, it just comes to my house. And what we have is really special. We talked through it, and I think it was about 3 weeks before James and I said, okay, let's go up to New York and see what this is all about. And believe it or not, it was actually my first time to go to New York. And we started the process just by talking to some people that he had really close in the community. And the fact that we were two guys who had bootstrapped this business and taken it from a little brick and mortar butcher shop in Nashville to a very well-known butcher shop within the food community. And I mean, we'd been written about several times and had this wholesale business. And the fact that we weren't just, you know, two B-school graduates that saw a void in the market and started to create something in order to fill that void, we were led here much more organically, and it was just a natural progression of our business. And these VCs saw that, and they saw that there was something really special in the way that we approached it and the way that we viewed it and the knowledge that we have behind it. I mean, we spent, you know, 8 years standing behind a counter, working directly with a consumer, understanding the seasonality of certain meats, recipes, techniques, what the consumer wants.
I want to talk about that because, you know, obviously you had all this expertise in how to process meat, how to sell meat, how to find, you know, the right people to work with. But now you're going into this maybe more unexplored territory for you around, hey, how do we do digital marketing? How do we, you know, manage the logistics and supply chain of, you know, an e-commerce business? Like, how do we make a great website? What is it that we need to do on the technology side? Like, how did you go about bringing those people together and maybe give people a sense of like how the company is structured today?
Once again, this is a lot of hard work and a little bit of luck. We were introduced to Taylor Green, who was at Lear at the time and is currently at Collaborative Fund in New York. And we met with them and we were talking to them about investing. Lear had to pass for some different reasons, but they were very excited about what we were doing. And Taylor actually came in as an angel investor. But what he also did was introduced us to a man named Ryan McIntyre, who ended up being our very first hire for Porter Road. And he is our GM of digital. The three of us took a yoga class this morning.
I feel so centered right now. So once again, like Chris was saying, a lot of hard work, a little bit of luck. We've been interviewing people. We've made it down to our three people that we were going to hire as our GM of e-commerce. And we get the phone call that Ryan is available to talk, and we have pretty much made our decision. And then we go into the hottest coffee shop in Manhattan, and all three of us are just pouring down sweat, and we walk out of there, and we're like, oh, crap.
He's the guy.
And I'm very happy we took that long walk and sat in that super hot coffee shop, because Ryan has been like a third partner to us. He is
what made you think he's the guy?
He has a great pedigree. He was an advisor to Lear at the time. His last position before that was CMO of Jack Threads. To date him back to kind of let you know where he came from, he used to work for Columbia House. So, I mean, digital marketing at its very beginning. And then
make him sound like he's like 60 years old.
I just think it's incredible. I think it's incredible. He's not that old. Like, I've told people that before, and they're like, how old is this guy?
Wait, how old is this guy?
he's been in it since, you know, I mean, that's all he's done. He's been in the startup world of New York for over, you know, 15 years. And he worked for a company that created customized like songs whenever your phone would ring. I forget the name of the company, but like, you remember when you would download a song and your phone would ring and they'd play Rocky Top? That's what mine told.
You just told everybody that you were super old now too.
Well, it was a flip phone. we're pretty old.
I think, you know, he brings something completely different. He's extremely passionate. He is now a giant meat nerd like Chris and I, but it's nice to have somebody that you can bounce ideas off of, somebody that helps rein in Chris and I when we go on tangents.
Somebody who will take his first yoga class this morning with us.
Yeah.
So, you know, I actually was born and raised in France and lived there until I was 17. Like my family is half French, half American. And in France, it's very typical that you have, you know, butcher shops around the corner. But like any other place, you know, those have gradually gone away to, you know, big retailers. And here in the U.S., we've got the Walmarts or the Whole Foods or wherever it is.
Yeah.
And that same idea is also happening online. You have these companies that sell just about everything. And you're the butcher shop around the corner. Like, how do you find a place, especially online, where I'm not necessarily walking in front of your building every day, so it's not reminding me that you're there and that you exist? How do you find your place online and remind people that you exist, especially when you have these like behemoth companies out there trying to grab as much of people's wallet as possible?
There's a couple points there, I guess. One of those is We see a lot of our customers come in from the access story that you just mentioned, where they had that butcher shop around the corner and the place they relied on to get all of their meat from, and they've seen it taken away from them. So they've turned to the internet looking for these sources. The other side of it is you have these behemoth online companies that are selling a little bit of everything. What they're not selling is a story and a quality product. So a consumer is an educated person. They know what they want. They know what they're looking for. And nobody's throwing a party and like inviting over all their friends and being like, you got to come try these steaks. They're the most incredible thing. I got them from Amazon. Like there's not a sexy story there. There's nothing much to that.
Well, it's about back again to education.
Right.
And that's part of like the story Chris is talking about. We're two extremely passionate people and we want people to be educated in what they're consuming with everything in life. And we want to be the guys that help you out with feeding you and your family with meat. And the story behind that is 100% true. It's not a story that we made up to put on the back of a box. We didn't make up and, coin ourselves as.
But I mean, even taking you back to like the giant online stores now as well, it's as a consumer, you still have that separation. Even if you didn't have a butcher shop down the street, but you still have you would go to the big grocery store to get your toiletries and cleaning supplies. And then you would make the extra stop at the wine store because you want to talk to that somm and know what wine you're getting. And then if you had the access to that butcher shop, you would make that extra stop at the butcher shop. And I think that the consumer will continue to keep that separation of the way that they shop and the way that they conceptualize where they're getting these products from. And it's about that education. It's about that, the story and knowing what went behind it and the passion behind that product that leads people to, make that extra effort.
Would you ever open more brick and mortar butcher shops, or is that not the plan?
It's not the plan, but we never say never.
Yeah, we never thought we'd be online. So Chris and I, our usual words of wisdom for young business people and entrepreneurs is that life, just as in business, is not a straight path, but it's what you do with the detours and the turns along the way that makes you successful. And that's very true to what our plan is as well.
Are there other things about building Porter Road that you would have done differently with the insight that you have now?
Absolutely. But you can't look back on it.
And it all led us to here.
Exactly. So everything made us better along the way. And as long as you're learning from your mistakes, it wasn't a mistake.
But if you're talking to a younger entrepreneur today, are there shortcuts or things that you would tell them, don't do that thing or here's a better way?
Yeah, but are they going to listen?
Don't listen to other people.
That's a good one.
we literally formed our LLC to open the first butcher shop. And the attorney that wrote up our articles of organization was a very good friend, like a lifelong friend of mine. And she slid our articles of organization across the table, looked at both of us dead in the eyes and said, "This is a terrible idea." So here we are.
Yeah, well, I have a lot of similar stories to that where many times, and sometimes, by the way, those people were right. And me and my co-founder had to look at each other in the eyes and say, wait a minute, do we need to change something about our business? So it's not always wrong. Sometimes it inspires you to do something a little different.
And it's the hard work that gets you over those humps and pushes you in the right direction. So
yeah,
we're pretty proud of what we've done and we want to continue to grow with it. And, we're excited to see where it goes. And I think that the consumers are too. I mean, we're making a lot of good friends out there.
If people want to become your friends, they can go to porterroad.com and we'll put some links in the show notes. There's so much more that we barely scratched the surface, I feel like. So next time I'm going to come to you. I want to come to Kentucky and Tennessee and see what you're up to and taste all of your amazing products. People can check you out. You've also got subscriptions now that we didn't even talk about that. That seems amazing. If you want to get your meats in the mail, we're past the Super Bowl now, but there's always time to get lots of hot dogs if that's what you need. So we'll put all those links in the show notes and also some of these great books and resources that you've shared. But thank you so much. This was really insightful.
Awesome. Well, we would love to host you anytime.
Yeah, we are very proud. Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you for all the great products as well.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right, man.
Bye.
Ooh, one last thing before we go. I'm talking to you at home. What's your favorite brand these days? Is there something that you think is really well made? Or maybe someone that you'd love for me to talk to? Send us a tweet. We are at Lumi, L-U-M-I, on Twitter. We're making this show for you, so tell us what you want to hear, and we'll make it happen. Thanks. See you next time.